Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So you had the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court formally after the vote this weekend, and then you had it informally yesterday with the President of the United States, at which point an interesting tack by Trump. Both Trump and Kavanaugh recognized the tumult over the last couple of weeks, but only one apology was offered, and it wasn't from Kavanaugh.
I want to apologize to Brett and the entire Kavanaugh family for the terrible pain and suffering you have been forced to endure. Those who step forward to serve our country deserve a fair and dignified evaluation, not a campaign of political and personal destruction based on lies and deception. What happened to the Kavanaugh family violates every notion of fairness, decency, and due process. Our country, a man or a woman, must always be presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. And with that, I must state that you, sir, under historic scrutiny, were proven innocent. Thank you.
Proven innocent. There's like not really such a thing, but I take the point.
Yeah, and then Brett Kavanaugh got up there and spoke, and
but what about the Trump apology on behalf of the nation? What did you?
I was
think
a little taken back by it.
312-642-5600 Turnkey Debt Pro answer line 64636DA Turnkey Debt Pro text line.
I was a little taken back. I was surprised to hear that. Maybe he could apologize by what he went through. You know, we're sorry what you went through, but on behalf of the United States of America, we owe you an apology.
Well, the United States of America minus the crazed left.
Right.
He could have said, but he didn't. But no, it was implied.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice gesture. It was just took me a little bit by surprise. I went, oh, okay. What did you think?
I thought it was a nice touch because I think the moment calls for sort of room temperature moral indignation, and that's what that was. That was a version of it. It was shameful what happened to you. We all know at whose hands it happened. Mm-hmm. We all know who the responsible parties are, and so I apologize for what happened to you, but we're moving on. And that's sort of the tack that Kavanaugh took, minus the apology. Kavanaugh saying, "Look, there's no bitterness. I'm looking forward to being the same kind of judge on the Supreme Court that I was in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals."
The Senate confirmation process was contentious and emotional. That process is over. My focus now is to be the best justice I can be. I take this office with gratitude and no bitterness. On the Supreme Court, I will seek to be a force for stability and unity. My goal is to be a great justice for all Americans, and for all of America. I will work very hard to achieve that goal. I was not appointed to serve one party or one interest, but to serve one nation. America's Constitution and laws protect every person of every belief and every background. Every litigant in the Supreme Court can be assured that I will listen to their arguments with respect and an open mind.
And this was the whole point about addressing the 11th hour criticism directly. I'm not talking about sexual harassment or abuse. I'm talking about oh, he doesn't have the temperament. Oh, he can't be impartial. Oh, he's going to have to recuse himself from so many of these cases. And that portion of his statement was meant to address those criticisms head on.
What did you think of his tone? I mean, do you think he was measured, calm? Because before he even spoke, I wondered, are we going to get Brett Kavanaugh? Are we going to get angry Brett or the first round of the confirmation hearing?
That's over. That's over. I mean, and it was interesting because not only did he essentially say that the hearing didn't change me as a judge, he also said it didn't change how I'm going to live my life.
In the wake of the Senate confirmation process, my approach to life also remains the same. I will continue to heed the message of Matthew 25. I will continue to volunteer to serve the least fortunate among us. I will continue to coach, teach, and tutor. I will continue to strive to be a good friend, colleague, husband, and dad.
So to me, it was the Opie Taylor, Brett Kavanaugh you got at the outset of the confirmation hearing prior to all of the allegations.
And then, he, of course, his parents were there, his wife and the kids were there. They're skipping school today, Dan.
And it must have been cold in that room.
Yeah.
Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg had gloves on.
Well, she's just so tiny. She must be cold. She has no meat on her bones. I mean, you know. But yeah, he did. He went, you know, he did some, he repeat, rinsed and recycled some things about, you know, his mother being a pioneer and all that that we heard before. But
so Ruth Bader Ginsburg can't stand up on her own weight? Ruth Bader Ginsburg doesn't have the energy to put her two mittens together and clap? Do you notice that?
I noticed that, yeah. When they walked, everybody stood up and she sat. Yeah. She looks very feeble and sickly to me. I think the RBG workout routine is going to be taking a few days off.
I'd like to see her perform.
Or do you think
that
she
routine.
Did that on purpose?
What?
Do you think she did sat down and didn't clap on purpose?
Oh,
or do you think it was something physical? Because I at first, she was there Saturday night because she was with Kagan for his swearing in.
You saw like Clarence Thomas, who was standing next to her and clapping vociferously, kind of help her up. That's not the issue. The issue is once she's up, she's not clapping. That was the issue.
I thought it was a physical limitation, but
to clap?
Yeah, I did.
No, I don't think so. I think there was something there, but it is interesting. I mean, a friend of mine who's argued cases for the Supreme Court, he says when you argue a case, first of all, it takes like 25 minutes for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to be seated, and it takes about 25 minutes for her to leave too. And
really?
I mean, she's in her 80s.
Get her a wheelchair. Move it along, people.
Just describing reality. He said when she's asking questions, you can't see her over the riser. So it sounds like there's just like a disembodied voice asking you questions from off stage left or something.
Oh no. Oh.
All right, hang in there, RBG. Ed in Oakbrook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say is that Trump is probably the only president of all time that would have, maybe Andrew Jackson, but that would have stayed with this guy as far as keeping him on contention for Supreme Court. If you look back at all of the other Republican candidates, they all would have folded, and he would have been dumped, even though this is one of the most important selections at this time with the thing coming out. Well, name me one that would have stood up, Dan.
Well, okay. How about Ronald Reagan? He stood by Bork all the way to the bitter end, didn't he? Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Thank you very much. All right, Ed.
Bork had a different ending.
We're going to do, Ed and I will do the presidents on some other show. We'll have to debate Andrew Jackson since he was invoked by Ed. Mark on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What's wrong with President Trump last night on behalf of the nation apologizing to Justice Kavanaugh and his family when Obama went all over the world apologizing how bad America was?
Okay, yeah, that's a fair point. Can't argue that. Thanks, Mark.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about the Kavanaugh confirmation ceremony, President, yesterday. And in case you were wondering, now that he's been confirmed and the ceremonial confirmation and he'll take a seat and this will dissipate, the left doesn't want it to.
It's happening today. He's hearing their first cases today.
Well,
and he checked his kids out of school today to watch their father.
That's
so
great.
Sweet.
And the left continues to put the pedal to the metal with their GOTV campaign for the GOP. For example, a Minnesota teacher has been placed on leave as a school district investigates complaints over Twitter post. The Twitter post. So who's going to take one for the team and kill Kavanaugh? Yeah. No, Rosemount, Minnesota. Yeah, she's on administrative leave pending the outcome of the investigation.
She should be in a classroom.
Yeah, so there you go.
Advocating for violence. You kind of don't want her around your kiddies.
Again, the keep these in mind when you next hear the calls from, say, a sack of Durbin for civility in our politics. Mm-hmm. Greg and Schomburg.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Dan, when you started this segment, you talked about recusal. There's nobody that can tell him that he has to recuse himself, is there?
No. I suggested that the complaints are that he would have to recuse himself from cases because of the political statements he made about the Clintons during the confirmation hearing. These were many of the specious arguments that were being leveled by the left as a fallback position after their Blase for Deborah Ramirez, Julie Swetnick approach did not work. Then it was remembered. Then it was temperament. Then it was recusal. Then it was hopelessly biased. But no, Supreme Court.
There's no one that can tell him to do it, right?
Correct. That no one. Supreme Court justices are exempt from some of the regulations that govern judges and lesser courts. Thanks for the call, Greg. So, what I'm hearing, too, is that, and the polling seems to bear this out, which is, I think, why President Trump made the point to express some moral indignation, continued moral indignation, is this is really motivating not just Trump voters, not just the Republican base, but it's motivating people who are coming out anyway to rethink their position of sending a message to Trump through their votes for federal offices, and maybe sending a message to Democrats about their conduct.
Really?
I mean, you see this survey that Washington Examiner posted, for example. This is from CNN. CNN poll with a polling agency. Independent voters disapprove of the Democrats' handling of the Kavanaugh nomination by a 28-point margin. And excuse me, and it's interesting because there's a bit of a dichotomy here. Just 41% polled said they wanted to see Kavanaugh confirmed. So 41 to 51, they opposed his nomination. However, 36% approve of how the Democrats handled the nomination compared to 56 who disapprove overall. And it's a 28-point margin, 30 to 58 among independents.
Wow.
So you could say, look, I don't agree with Kavanaugh. Or I have some suspicions, and he shouldn't be confirmed. But the way you conducted yourself, I find despicable. That's essentially what independent voters and the nation is saying.
I think people realize that, gosh, that happened to him. That could happen to me. That could happen to my husband. That can happen to my son. That could happen to my college student, you know.
I think that's right, because what is the way that they handle this go to? It goes to sort of fundamental first principles, fairness, due process. Fairness, due process. And I think the majority of the American people, the majority of independents, felt that he was treated unfairly. He wasn't afforded due process. These presumptions like of innocence that are cultural norms in addition to legal standards. And Democrats are paying the price, and it's up to Republicans to make sure they continue to do so for the next 30 days.
You know who's really benefiting? Senator Ted Cruz. His campaign, they're up 6 points now compared to, it was 1 to 2 points about a month ago.
Yeah, you're seeing a bump in a lot of places.
Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. You're about it, it's a wonderland.
You're about it, it's a wonderland. Good morning, Dan and Amy.
woman. You guys all sing this song when I walk in every morning, the too. It's really sweet. Gross. Oh, you know what?
The voice of masculinity in the 21st century.
Wow, that escalated quickly.
We'll get to John Mayer, but first, Paul from Lake Forest wants to air his grievances.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning. I was listening to you guys talk on the news there about Trump saying how Chicago's a hellhole full of scum. And here it is, 5:30 in the morning. We got illegal aliens beating drums outside of hotels at the corner of Kinsey and State. We've called the cops 10 times in 5 days because that's what we were told to do here. We were told not to go over there and take it into our own hands. Cops haven't come out once. And I'm pro-cop. You know their hands are being tied by somebody, the sanctuary city. We got to end this crap. This is garbage.
Are you in Lake Forest or are you in the city?
No, I stayed in Kinsey.
I'm in the city right now. I'm actually heading up to Knollwood. That's why I'm up so early.
Oh, good. But, play well.
There's a noise ordinance that you can't do anything before 8 a.m.
8 o'clock in the morning. Yep, we've got signs all over this building here, and these animals are out there pounding on drums.
Well, what are they protesting?
I mean, what happened to the city?
What are they protesting?
These are the people that are want higher wages, even though they can't read English.
Okay. What happened to the city? Well, you know, 100 years of Democrat rule and cultural Marxist takeover, and you know there are implications. Thanks for the call, Paul. Sorry,
Paul sounds a little unhinged.
He what?
Like he's going to go take it to the streets. You people are here illegally. Yeah. And you're making loud noises. Go home.
Maybe if they did a cover of that Phil Collins song, rather than beating the drums, that would be more more pleasing to the those who are staying. Let's say
that would be annoying. That's right by Harry Carey's Communications Museum.
No, he's at a hotel.
He's at a hotel, right?
Oh, like with that little State boutique Kinsey. Hotel right there across the street. Maybe the what's it? That's not
It's changed names. Someone I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Stayed there once with a Bartman ball. That's a long story.
You you stayed overnight in a hotel room with the Bartman ball.
Yeah, for a story. It was a really great conversation. The night before they blew it up. Because, you know, Grant DePorter is this big showman, and he likes to do fun things.
Yeah, sure.
They had it stay at a hotel in a bed.
So you slept with the Bartman ball.
Yes, I did. It's so stupid.
It's odd.
It was odd. But you know what? It was very relaxing. Because nobody was asking me any questions or trying to do anything nefarious. I read a book and went to sleep.
Were you trying to, was it like an ab scam? Were you trying to bait Bartman into that hotel room? by dangling
no,
the ball?
No,
as...
no. The ball had been purchased by somebody. By Grant DePorter.
Grant DePorter, I know.
And then they made spaghetti out of it and then somebody ate it.
So hilarious.
Well, it was fun at the time. Well, you're not a Cub fan, so
no.
You don't care.
Yeah.
Yawn. I got
boring.
Yawn.
Oh, completely.
That is so mean.
By the way, what? Showman and Grant DePorter, only in Chicago do those words go in the same sentence. I mean,
remember when he bought a cornflake that was the shape of Illinois? Remember that? And then I found a cornflake the shape of Illinois, and I put it in a little ring box and gave it to him and said, here, this is free. You didn't have to buy it.
These are the kind of stories that make me want to move immediately. Leave. I cannot leave Chicago fast enough listening to this. This is our
anyway, but back to the protesters. You know, you just got to keep calling police, and they should be receiving a noise violation notice.
Yeah, okay. Right. I don't know what fantasy land you live in.
Well, when construction workers try that stuff on the weekends, we always call.
Yeah. Construction workers are not a politically sensitive, protected class.
Exactly.
Big difference in the most politically dysfunctional, well, most political and thus dysfunctional city in the country, maybe outside of D.C. All right, so we started the segment, you know, with that
John Mayer, can we play that song again?
John Mayer music.
Oh, you don't think he's talented? Probably think he's campy.
No. I probably think he should have a genitalia cap on. That's what I probably think. So he was having a concert so he could regale people with all of his terrible music. And He took the time out to call for a new contract between men and women in the 21st century.
Oh.
And, you know, somebody as dreamy and sensitive as John Mayer, if he makes a pronouncement on male-female relations,
it's going
to
stick.
It has to be acknowledged. Yeah. It has to be discussed.
Ooh,
it has
it
to be
contract?
Considered.
I can't wait to hear about it.
John Mayer addressing the audience, including one woman who engaged in a bit of back and forth about this proposed contract.
Bullshit is the idea that if you're a man, any woman you see, you should be able to get an erection.
What?
And when we don't, that's the trauma. That I don't want it to be the male contract. I'm telling you that's the contract, and we have to tear the contract up. And we... What's that? No, it doesn't. It...
Oh my God, what is happening?
The man, no, hold on. This is fine. She's actually asking a decent, pertinent question. What you're saying, what is the male contract then? Mm-hmm. The male contract is to, at between the ages of whatever, puberty and college, to be instructed to have a class, to have a voice of reason taught to young men. You are not supposed to be able to do this to everything that moves. You are not entitled to be able to do this to everything that moves. This does not come naturally to a man. This does not come unnaturally to a man. You do not possess the universal ability to have any woman that you see. They're scared and you're scared. And I'm just going on record as revealing the trauma of men feeling like they've fallen short of a bullshit alpha male contract that nobody can live up to. And until we get rid of that in men, we won't have the life that we all deserve. And I'm sorry for taking up your time to be able to say that. I don't think it's controversial. I think it's the truth. And I don't want to sing Father's Big into your daughters and walk away without adding that amendment in this day.
Gay!
Wow. That's when they should just stop talking and start singing. Because I've noticed a lot of concerts. I went to Stevie Nicks and then Lady Gaga. They just talked a lot. And we don't want to hear from, we just want you to sing and perform.
Yeah, in the immortal words of Gene Simmons, you know, just sing, dance, juggle, do whatever it is you do, what we paid for you to do, monkey mare. Just dance up there, monkey. But you know, here's the thing. So, I know he's just a, you know, ballad-addled, goofy musician. But, I mean, he doesn't talk dissimilarly from, like, professors we talk about.
Right.
The trauma of this for during the ages of that, and we got to blow that up, and it's not natural, and it's not unnatural, and I don't know really what the hell I'm saying. I'm just trying to emote and be on your side, because if I don't get applause from prepubescent children, then I can't live in my big mansion on the West Coast. That's essentially what John Mayer was. You're not entitled. All this, like, what men are entitled to, with this alpha male contract, that is all nonsense. Oh, and by the way, John, Mr. Mayer, boys are to be instructed to be respectful of women. Is that the takeaway? Yeah, agreed. And you know who does that? Parents. Not right. Classes, not society, not this abstraction called society, not the village, parents. Mm-hmm. That's who does it.
Yeah, I'm in charge, not John Mayer.
I'm so glad we could clear that up.
What's your favorite John Mayer song?
Boy, it's like what's my favorite form of torture?
There we go. To your daughters.
Talk about a guy who will do and say anything to get laid. That's John Mayer in the song. I mean, speaking of the you're not entitled to, you're not. I don't know. What are you talking about? You're not entitled to get it. I mean, it's a little early for this kind of blue language, but you're not entitled to get an erection with respect to every woman you see. Hey, John.
Hey,
buddy. I don't know what your problem is. That's not happening to the rest of us. We make distinctions. Holy cow.
Ooh.
John Mayer. Related story.
Yes. Oh, but there's something related to this.
Well, tangentially. In this,
I love tangentially.
To 21st century world in which we live, we're trying to figure out what's been happening.
The name of my cat.
The contract.
Yeah.
And what the new contract should be. This blockbuster from Vanity Fair. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Apparently, the NFL.
Yeah.
Those scantily clad cheerleaders on the sidelines.
Oh, now they're having male cheerleaders.
It's worse than that. Apparently, do you know what that was all about?
What?
According to Vanity Fair now, those scantily clad cheerleaders dancing around on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Was a play to, and I'm quoting, sell sex on the sidelines.
No. No. I mean, no. Come on, Dan. Tell me the truth.
It blown this case wide open, has Vanity Fair. Yeah.
Cheerleaders are fun to look at, and I'm not a lesbian, but ladies like to look at other ladies, just see what their hair is,
It's not a show if you don't disclaim that you're not a lesbian every day.
No, I do about once a week. Let people know I'm not on that team yet.
Front offices gave NFL cheerleaders an extreme makeover in order to tap into the fantasies of male fans.
Well, yeah, they're really? Cheerleaders.
Wow. That is just
fascinating.
It's like an epiphany. That is just excellent reporting. Now, I mean, there are serious allegations of misconduct and maltreatment made by cheerleaders in the story. And I'm not ridiculing those allegations, okay? I am ridiculing Vanity Fair.
You are.
And their breathless expose that cheerleaders wearing essentially bathing suits, jumping around with pom-poms, all these good-looking women, that's intended to sell sex on the sidelines. You don't say. But there are serious allegations. Five former members of the Redskins squad say the team flew them to Costa Rica in 2013, took away their passports, and required them to pose topless in front of rich fans.
Oh, well.
I mean, if that's true, then obviously that's a problem. One former member of the New Orleans Saints squad said the team fired her over an Instagram photo she posted of herself in a lace bodysuit. Okay.
All right, well.
Six cheerleaders filed a sex discrimination suit against the Texans, claiming they were paid less than the state's minimum wage and then body shamed by the coach. You know, there's varying degrees of allegations of misconduct here, but... It would not surprise me to learn that athletes, owners, rich fans in powerful positions took advantage of young, attractive women. That would not surprise me to learn. I was just pointing out the kind of the selling sex on the sidelines. What does Hollywood sell?
Sex.
What do the networks sell?
Sex.
What do big corporations sell?
Sex.
We're getting dumber.
I know.
For anybody who thinks that the most advanced point in time is the latest point in time, that fallacy, the way we talk about male-female relations and so much else is proof that that is not the case. There are many other examples of proof, but this is really the case. We're getting lectured by John Mayer incoherently, and Vanity Fair can't believe. Vanity Fair, which sells what?
Sex.
Can't believe that the NFL cheerleaders were selling sex on the sidelines.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So are you paying attention to how the Kavanaugh confirmation process, saga, travesty has is being received locally? You know, like where your kids go to school.
Yeah.
We mentioned last hour, one grade school teacher in Rosemount, Minnesota, is... on paid administrative leave, pending the outcome of an investigation after she tweeted, "So who's going to take one for the team and kill Kavanaugh?"
Well, inciting violence is never good.
Yeah. So
she'll lose her job. Right?
Paying attention to what's happening, grade school, high school, what your teachers are imparting, your kids' teachers are imparting on them as pertains to this matter and the associated issues, male-female relations and so forth. Paying attention? You should be, right? Let me give you an example of why you should be. Bridget Evans. Bridget Evans is a grade school teacher at Nichols Middle School in the Evanston-Skokie District 65 School District. Seventh grade.
We call that Skokieston, yes.
Skokieston. All right. She penned a letter that she sent out to the staff. So this is publicly financed communication from her District 65 email to the staff at Nichols School. Good day, Nichols family. Troubled by the recent political climate of our country, I did something writing, hoping that it would provide some sort of relief. I would like to share with you my apologies if anyone feels as if I have imposed on their political beliefs. So why would that? Why would anybody believe that? There's unanimity of opinion in K through 12 public school education, isn't there? Well, not really. Maybe at Skokieton District 65 there is. Bridget Evans, again, government emails here. To my future granddaughters, she writes. To my future granddaughters. I'm hoping that by the time you are seriously being considered, or at least by the time you are old enough to read this and understand, this moment of which I speak will be nothing more than a glitch in our country's history, a momentary lack of moral judgment. But I fear you will have a fight on your hands to regain the rights I had been granted. Yes, I fear that for all the forward progress we have made for women's rights, we have somehow allowed those same rights to be threatened or flat out revoked. I do speak with a voice of uncertainty, as I did not vote for our current president, nor do I stand in favor of the man who was recently voted to sit in the Supreme Court. No kidding. Somehow our country seems to be willing, ready, and able to cast a shadow on what it has meant to be a woman in this country. To negate and mock the pain of a woman's violation undermines the liberties and justice of being an American. To overlook not one, not two, but the voices of many women who were allegedly, and yes, here I will acknowledge the right to be deemed innocent until proven guilty, sexually assaulted by a man who will now make such choices for you is unsettling. And yet it is with these misgivings my heart is heavily weighed, and I do apologize, not because I failed to vote, because I couldn't vote loud enough. What does that even mean? She goes on to recount Barack Obama's presidency. And even if you disagree with his politics, you couldn't question his integrity as a man, a father, a husband. But that was too much for white people, is what she implies. Writing, and so they ran to the one who reminded them more of themselves, ignoring that outside of the color of their skin, they had less in common with the new president than they did with his predecessor. They ran to a man who does not respect his own daughter, his flesh and blood. We have women who have seemed to have forgotten the daily struggles of being female in America, because there are some women out there who seem to believe that they are not part of Me Too, at least until they have to live that moment which made the movement necessary in the first place. There are some women out there who have found themselves in a place of power, but now that they can too wear the pants in the Senate, have forgotten who got them there in the first place. Those who do not have your best interests at heart have left a legacy. Their sons and grandsons will be grateful. But why, you ask? Again, I speculate. They fear you. And here I speak to all daughters, regardless of race. They fear your strength and your compassion. They fear your power and your brilliance. History has demonstrated that those in power will do anything they can to retain control. We see that today. Regardless of how long or how hard the struggle, don't let anyone undermine your strength, your beauty, your intelligence. Don't forget the power of being a woman. Okay, Helen Reddy, you're loving you fiercely, your anticipated grandmother. And then there's reactions from the school psychologist. Thank you for sharing this, Bridget Evans. Thank you, manager at the school. This is a very sad and scary time for women. I keep thinking it's a sick joke, but really I know better. The health clerk, thank you. The another employee, wow, your words just made me feel scared for my child's future. I've been worried since the day he was elected president. Bilingual teacher, all at Evanston Skokie District 65.
Well, I was proud of Peyton and Eli because both of their schools, Amundsen High School, say it.
Almond Brothers High School.
They played.
Good music program.
Well, they great football team. Great volleyball, too. No, they actually played the confirmation hearing during class, and they saw not only her, but then, because I thought for sure they'd only hear the woman's voice and not hear Brett Kavanaugh, but they listened to both.
Yeah.
And same with Eli. What's my second kid's name?
Peyton and Eli.
Yeah, Peyton and Eli. And Eli would listen to, you know, a shortened version of her testimony and Kavanaugh's testimony at Blaine. So, and they both formed their own opinions. And they both asked me what my opinion was, but I asked them what their opinion was first. And they both did not believe Christine Blasey Ford. Didn't believe her.
Well, that's
they
because...
felt bad for her, and they said, you know, something, they believe something did happen, but they didn't think that there was proof.
Is that because their mom is one of the, quote, women who seem to have forgotten the daily struggles of being female in America, according
exactly.
to Bridget Evans?
Yeah.
Are you one of those women?
You know what? I don't like when women tell me how I should feel and what my struggles are. Do I have some Me Too moments? Yeah, but you know what? I keep that to myself. All these people are just coming out like, look at me. I'm a victim too. Shut up. Have some decorum. Have some class. No one wants to hear about your crap. They just don't. And I'm so sick of this. I'm just, you know, the whole Blasey Ford, that just took it over the top for me.
Well, what about this in terms of this characterization of, you know, this kind of women's struggle against the patriarchy?
Oh,
I mean, that's what this all is. By the way, the seventh grade teacher, I wouldn't want my kid being educated by Bridget Evans, not just because she's, you know, a lobotomized leftist. She's a terrible writer.
Those are grammatical mistakes?
No, there's logical ones, and it's just so... trite. It's just lame writing. Good Lord. I don't know what she teaches, but it's, you know, not surprisingly, when your main interest is political propaganda, your other skill sets atrophy, and that seems to be the case with Miss Evans. But I mean, the whole they fear you. You know, this is the poison this is the poison that the left is selling too, right? That it's male versus female, it's black versus white, it's the solidarity and marginality, and we have to maintain our status as a marginal population to work in concert with the other marginal populations against the man, whoever the man is, even when some of us are the man. And when some of us become the man, then if they're not still part of the struggle, then they're the sellout. So the women in power now that she decries. And of course, the suggestion that the only reason somebody could have voted for Trump is because he's white. I mean, this is what she writes. They ran to the one who reminded them more of themselves, ignoring the outside color of their skin. They had less in common with the new president than they did with his predecessor. So the people ran to him because he's white. White women ran to him because he's white, even though they should know, or that what they're too dumb to know, that they have more in common with Obama than with Trump. I mean, you know, this is an example of the sort of string a bunch of leftist cliches together and, you know, call it a powerful statement to my future granddaughters. Well, explain. Tell me more about this group of women, this group of people, what they're thinking, what's motivating them, since you have this third eye into the, you know, human condition and to women's souls, Miss Evans. But I just say again, boy, oh boy, I mean, middle school teachers tweeting out assassination advocacy and penning letters internally to the entire faculty and staff in a school district. I mean, you want to pay attention to what's happening? Yeah, there's, well, how did the schools get like this? Well, what, look at the college campuses and the boorish conduct of the students as well as faculty. Yeah, generations of Bridget Evanses teaching and cycling through these schools, first cycling through, then teaching.
This is what it begets. Yeah, and speaking of college campuses, learning this morning that the University of Illinois is going to have a new class. 8-week course called Trumpaganda, the War on Facts, Press, and Democracy. So it's going to focus on Trump's ongoing war with the mainstream media and then break down his tweets. I'm not kidding.
All the Chinese nationals attending U of I will enjoy that. Glenn in Holland, Michigan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah. Has anybody thought about what this is doing to the actual women's movement?
What is the women's movement?
Well, I used to think I knew what it was, but now since they've peeled back the, you know, I've seen into it a little bit, I mean, this women logic is just terrifying. And I would have voted for a woman, you know, a year or so ago, but now that I've actually heard them and their rhetoric and the absolute irrational thought patterns, I'm out, man.
I
look at the candidate. I'm not gender.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. Yeah.
I don't see color. I don't see gender.
I see it. I don't place as much importance on it.
You see? I can't see.
No, I see. I see that you're a woman. I can see that.
Are you a man? Are you a white man?
Yeah. I mean, no, but that's right. Of course. Of course. I mean, Heather McDonald's a woman. She has a good piece at City Journal, as per usual. And she'll be with us at Freedom Family Fest.
It's freedomsummitchicago.com. You can buy your ticket still. freedomsummitchicago.com. And you're doing the Saturday morning segment, right?
I have no
Heather
idea.
Heather McDonald.
She writes, feminist ideologies will continue wreaking havoc throughout American institutions, especially the claim that self-professed sexual assault victims deserve unqualified belief. And she goes on to recount some of the cases that we've recounted, the false accusations by Mattress Girl at Columbia and so forth. But so, I mean, yeah, it's about the kind of the individual, the intellect, what they're offering, how they're thinking, what they're proposing. Clay in the Loop.
Hey, it's funny how, first of all, the British call it the hashtag. We call it the pound. So the pound Me Too movement, I think, is at an end because it morphed into this guilty until proven innocent Napoleonic code thing, and people were falling down left and right, and it culminated into this big Kavanaugh hearing, and I think it's done. I think we're going back to some normalcy after this. What do you guys think?
Well, thanks for the call, Clay. I think some of it, when you have these excesses, as Ben Sasse would say, generously, I think it certainly undermines it. I do. But, I mean, if the Me Too movement, such as it is, or such as it gets credit for, continues outing actual predators, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, all those powerful men of the left, in the media, in politics, in sports, in business. I mean, you really haven't seen this visited upon C-suites at big corporations as much, and I expect that day is coming. So I think it will rise or fall on the weight of its work product, which, by the way, is how all of us do and should. So will they continue to pursue witch trials like Kavanaugh? Will they continue to accept evidence-free allegations, corroboration-free allegations? Well, if they continue to do that and that becomes their brand, then it will break up.
If they're more measured and they learn from this, then
they focus on, you know, people where there's a lot of reason to believe something wrong is happening or has been happening for a long time, then it won't.
Well, I think the Democratic Party has tried to stop some of their own from confronting Republican politicians in restaurants, and it, you know, I think that that would be a smart move on their part. And also Maxine Waters, having her pipe down and not having her on television as much would help them.
Right.
But then again, we know how they truly feel.
And Maxine Waters has been relatively quiet of late. You think that's an accident? Or she got a talking to from Democrat Party leadership? I'd suggest it's probably the latter. Mike in Mokena.
Hello there. What I saw in, or what I see, is how the women are trying to flip society around from what the Muslims do. The Muslims, no matter what, the man is always right. Women, you have to have all these witnesses to verify what a woman does, and the man's always right. Here, what they're trying to do here is make women on top. No matter what she says, she's always right, and the man is second-class citizen right now.
Well, yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, I think there's this, the feminism is, the feminist, modern feminist movement as exemplified by the Gloria Steinems and the Bella Abzugs and the Susan Faludis and the Andrea Dworkins of the world. Yes, I've read them. And I would suggest you read Camille Paglia, who's really fascinating and bawdy and interesting, and also recovering from associations with a lot of those people 40 and 50 years ago. But that iteration of the women's rights movement, mm-hmm. is just about power. It's about political power. And they're women of the left. So just as the men of the left, what they want is power for themselves and dominion over you. There's nothing different about the genders when it comes to that poisonous ideology, Marxist ideology. So equal treatment before the law, equal opportunities in society. Yep, I'm on board, no problem. Quality of work product is the way I want to be judged. No problem. That's a fair baseline. But you get into this power struggle and the solidarity and marginality Marxism, and you know, you get some of what you're seeing, and certainly the pablum from grade school teachers like Bridget Evans in Evanston, Skokie.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So in the wake of Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation and the focus on the Supreme Court, obviously the left is very concerned about victories it has achieved through the court that it could not achieve through the legislative branches over the last 50 years at the state and federal level. And strict constructionists among us, the originalists among us, are hoping that Brett Kavanaugh will tip the balance of the court to rein in a federal government that looks very different than the founders envisioned, at least according to the black letter of the Constitution. So is this a moment where we can restore America by returning to its founding document, that'd be the Constitution of the United States? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Howell Woltz. He's a journalist and author of Restoring America by Returning It to Its Constitution. Howell, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. Thank you for having me on WIND from the other Polish capital of the world.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. You suggest that devolution is the way to restore America. You mean devolution, back to the rule of law, back to the Constitution, devolution away from what the federal government has become, the Leviathan that it's become. How do we get from here to there?
Well, we should never have left the path to start with, and that is what Restoring America is about. We had the most amazing game plan ever in mankind's history, and I've spent 30 or 40 years. My first speech was given September 15th, 1977 on this topic, so it's not something new for me, and it seems like every problem America faces today can find its root from leaving the Constitution. So we don't need a revolution. We don't need to completely upend everything. We just simply need to go back to the path that the law requires us to still be on, but this sickness called progressivism has taken us in a completely opposite direction.
What is the most vile thing you've seen from progressivism?
Well, it's like Cicero said, you know, the more laws, the less justice. And one of the biggest objections I have is this administrative law, which unelected bureaucrats now for the last 30 or 40 years have been making law, which is the sole duty of Congress. And of course, presidents are doing it too now with executive orders you also won't find in my Constitution. But when unelected bureaucrats bypass Congress and Congress allows it, they create laws, they enforce them, they imprison Americans, and they put such a drag on our economy and our way of life and our freedoms. In fact, according to the American Legislative Exchange Council, they have created over 300,000 of these in my lifetime. That's 300,000 things you could do when I was a kid that are now against the law and will send you to prison. Congress has created 14,000, the federal government as a whole. If you read your constitutions, I encourage everyone out there to get a copy if you don't have it, because it's not taught in the schools any longer. But federal government's limited to punishing three crimes. That's piracy and felonies on the high seas, that's counterfeiting coin and securities of the U.S. government, and treason. That's it. But yet they've gone a little bit overboard with 314,000 ways to send us to prison.
Well, and so, I mean, so let's take a less obvious example, maybe a less popular example, and say, well, then how do you react to President Trump dispatching his attorney general to Chicago to sort of instruct Chicago, Chicago police, Chicago civilian political authorities to institute stop and frisk to deal with the violent crime problem here?
I don't like it a bit. I like his economic policies and plans. I'm an economist by training. He's probably the best president in that regard we've ever had. But stop and frisk is an obvious violation of the Fourth Amendment. Of course, you know, the real problem also might be that Rahm Emanuel and his predecessors decided to disarm the public in violation of the Second Amendment. So if you go back and you check statistics, for example, in Houston, a like community, and you have almost no murders, and then you go to Chicago, and it's who doesn't know someone who's been murdered, then maybe it was, again, a departure from the Constitution that caused the problem. But violating it further is not necessarily the answer.
Well, how would a departure from the Constitution create some of the problems in Chicago in regards to violence?
Well, again, if people had the right to keep and bear arms, I'll guarantee you there would not be all of these murders every week by people who weren't authorized to carry arms, or former felons, for example, things like that. So the not allowing people to protect their own persons and homes and property may be part of the problem.
So I mean, the Wall Street Journal opined, made an important point about all this talk in the context of the Kavanaugh confirmation about the court's legitimacy. And the legitimacy is a question. It could destroy the legitimacy of the court. And the Wall Street Journal writes, the battle of Kavanaugh has done nothing to diminish the very real authority of the court. In fact, the battle was so intense because of the court's authority that it still holds substantial power. And that power hasn't been diminished whatsoever, thus the importance and the intensity of the fight. So if that's true, and it's also true with respect to the federal government, even as people are questioning the credibility of so many agencies under the federal government, then how do we get back to sort of a minarchy that you're talking about, the original vision for government in a free society of the founders, particularly, as you said, when you don't have the Constitution even taught in schools anymore?
Right. When I was a kid, it was on every classroom wall I ever remember, and now it's nowhere to be found. But in answer to your question, there, I agree with part of that statement that the legitimacy of the court and its power, its ultimate power, is not the question, but it changed its complete purpose again, or direction. Back under FDR, the switch in time that saved nine, he was going to pack the court before there, because there is no restriction in Article 3 of how many justices. Right. And, you know, if they didn't approve unconstitutional legislation. So the Justice Hayes folded tent and said, OK, we'll not fight you. So that's the problem. And since that time, the court has become another branch of the legislation. It legislates sometimes more than Congress. Congress has delegated its law.
Yeah, no, I understand that part, but I mean, what's the path? Is it what Mark Levin has proposed with his Liberty Amendments? Is it an Article 5 path back to where you're suggesting we need to go, or is it electing better people that respect the separation of powers and the co-equal branches, both in Congress as the President of the United States? What's the path?
Yes, yes, and yes. But Article 5 convention, I'm all behind, and I'm working with Mark Meckler and his group. In fact, was on email with Patty Meckler last night. We're very, very anxious for that to come to pass, as long as it is a limited convention, limited to reducing federal power. And I'm all for having term limits on all judges, because the United States right now has recently admitted, and I will, if anybody wants these stats, I will send them to you. But in 5,760 murder cases or capital punishment cases where they're going to kill the citizen, they got it wrong 82% of the time. Now, if these people are so inept, corrupt, or don't care that prosecutors and judges are getting it wrong 8 out of 10 times, then I think we need to put limits on these people and find a better class of them altogether. And I think impeachment is the only option for Supreme Court justices who can't stay within the law. And again, I'm not a right winger or a left winger. I'm a constitutionalist like Citizens United. I mean, where the hell in my Constitution do you find corporations having citizenship rights? It's not there. They shouldn't. No one should be able to bribe my congressman, including political parties, unions, corporations, anybody that lives outside of my district. So we can address this by getting back to representatives working for us, not for super PACs and political parties and so on and so forth. We've seen the partisanship of the recent confirmation hearing. That's the result. And getting justices that if they step outside the law and judges, that they pay a penalty. And that's not the case today.
No,
impeachment, as Jefferson wrote back in 1821, it says impeachment is but a scarecrow. And he was right. Nobody ever uses it.
Was there any sitting Supreme Court justice that you think right now should be impeached?
Yes, almost all of them. And I was not for Brett Kavanaugh, not for the reasons that the circus show alleged, but because he was the guy that figured out, here's how we can go into Iraq. And he's the guy that figured out, let's call Obamacare a tax, which is also forbidden by my Constitution. They did that illegally. And the worst thing another thing I would love to see happen, since we're limited in time, is to repeal the 17th Amendment. That probably did more damage to our country and its balance of powers than anything in our history.
The direct election of U.S. senators.
Correct, because the Constitution calls, in Article 1, it calls for the legislatures to elect 2 senators from the state thereof. And it even goes on to say later in that clause that that's the one thing the founders put in the Constitution that could never be changed. So the 17th Amendment in its own right is illegal. But think about it. It was a tri-balance. It was we the people, we elect our congressmen and women. And then the states, they were represented by 2 senators who were in the upper body to limit the slip into federal centralization. And then you had, of course, the other 2 branches. But this separation of powers between state and federal, that was the ultimate separation. When they kicked that out in 1913, then all the power flooded to Washington, and we see the Leviathan, as you referred to it earlier, Dan, is what it is, and it's got to stop, or we're already bankrupt. I mean, we're $20 trillion in the hole, and we got a private central bank printing currency against debt. That's how they produce the currency. I mean, it's all madness, all of it forbidden by the Constitution. So step by step in restoring America, I've walked not back through history, but saying, here's where we went wrong. And if we just fix this problem, this whole group of problems goes away. And I recently wrote a plan for the city of Chicago. I'd like to forward to you by email at some point, combining some of these ideas on how we could how we could fix the problems there legally and restore these communities simply by reducing regulations and going back to constitution on a community by community basis, those that ask for it.
All right. Well, we're always open to ideas for the city of Chicago. We haven't had very many good ones implemented in, say, the last 100 years. So I'll look forward to that. He is Howell Woltz. He's the author of the book Restoring America by Returning to Its Constitution. Howell, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the book. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Take care.
Yeah, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. What's the future of policing in Chicago after the Jason Van Dyke guilty verdict on Friday? And does it involve President Trump, who chimed in again, not his first time referencing Chicago, but he was pretty specific yesterday.
And I have directed the Attorney General's office to immediately go to the great city of Chicago to help straighten out the terrible shooting wave. Want to straighten it out fast. There's no reason for what's going on there. I've told them to work with local authorities to try to change the terrible deal the city of Chicago entered into with ACLU, which ties law enforcement's hands, and to strongly consider stop and frisk. It works, and it was meant for problems like Chicago. It was meant for it.
So, yeah, and of course, Mayor Emanuel shot back right away because we are a Trump-free zone here in Chicago. I don't know
if you
got the memo.
Oh, yeah.
And we took the Trump signs down near the Trump Tower. So, you know, but he rejected.
Not the one on the tower.
No, not the one on the tower, but they made efforts to take that down. But he rejected President Trump's call for Chicago police to start using a stop and frisk.
Yeah, well, of course he did. Tiny dancer. Yeah. So here's the thing about Trump's call that's interesting. We mentioned the statistic yesterday. I think it bears repeating because it's just staggering. In the 4 years, almost to the day, mm-hmm. from the Laquan McDonald shooting to Van Dyke's conviction, nearly 2,500 murders, more than 11,000 people shot and wounded. In 4 years, 2,500 murdered, 11,000 shot and wounded. And so when it comes to order of magnitude, and I understand, and I say this as the caveat all the time, police are held to a higher standard than civilians, and they should be. Got it. But when it comes to the rank order of priority with respect to public safety, disproportionately for the minority communities in the city of Chicago, that because we're the most segregated major city in the country, are clustered on the south and west sides, is it the police that they have to fear the most, or individuals that live within or feast on their neighborhoods? I mean, what's the number of police-involved shootings on an annualized basis over that time period? What's it average, about a dozen?
Maybe, yeah.
And almost all of those have been deemed good shoots. 2,500, 11,000. I'm not saying that this is a job for the federal government. I think it's a job for the state and local government here, starting with the local government. But when you have civilian political authorities abdicate, you know, power hates a vacuum. And a lot of people hate seeing the carnage on the streets of Chicago. So the president is opining on the topic, even if that's the only thing he ultimately does, in addition to dispatching Jeff Sessions. But you still have this matter of a consent decree. That's something the Department of Justice could reconsider. Unfortunately, I don't know if you could get the political leadership of the city to reconsider. For more on all of these topics, in the post-Van Dyke conviction world. We're pleased to be joined again by Kevin Graham, who is the president of the Chicago FOP, FOP Lodge 7. Kevin, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with the President of the United States, and how did you react to what he said and to his announcement he was dispatching Jeff Sessions to Chicago?
Well, I was very happy. We have been speaking with the Justice Department for the last several months, and we have been asking them to intervene in the consent decree. We have said, you did the investigation. You know what the problems are. The problems are not with the members on the street, the members that I represent. The problem has to do with the political landscape and with it certainly started with the leadership in the police department. Now, I will say that a lot of the leadership in the police department has turned over. There are some things that are going correctly. But right now, we still are not invited to the table to discuss the problems that are occurring in the city.
And what did you think about President Trump's, you know, call for Chicago police to start using stop and frisk tactics? Is that going to help, you know, curb the city's violent crime numbers?
Well, first of all, the stop and frisk, at least in New York, was ruled unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. However, what we were doing prior to that was certainly legal. We were filling out cards, documenting why we were stopping people. The problem was that the city and the police department entered into an agreement with the ACLU, filling out long paperwork, trying to really put the emphasis on the police and not on the offender. And at that point, it became not just cumbersome, but it became a problem because the officers could be disciplined simply by making a mistake. So why would I risk being suspended for a day simply by making a simple mistake on a form? I mean, it was clearly a move to try and keep the police from stopping criminals.
And so the consent decree or the community's posture towards police in the wake of the Van Dyke conviction, which is going to be more impactful, more lasting in terms of the way Chicago police do their job?
Oh, the consent decree. They want to turn over the control of the Chicago Police Department to a federal judge. And this federal judge has already said that when we've asked to intervene to make sure we have a seat at the table, he's already told us no. This is the exact problem that we have had for a number of years, that the FOP has not been allowed at the table. And they are continuing it now through a federal judge. We're going to be in court for a long time. We would like, first of all, I'm very grateful to President Trump to send the Justice Department. I think if Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department take a good hard look at this, they will see what we see, that they need to take this back over and they need to do it correctly.
I wanted to get, we talked to Dan Herbert, Jason Van Dyke's defense attorney yesterday, as well as Joe McMahon, the prosecutor. But Herbert said that it's his understanding that the conviction will be appealed. And so I wanted to get your reaction to the Van Dyke verdict and next steps.
My feelings on the verdict were that the jury got it wrong. I don't think they understood was that this is somebody who, it's not about what they think the fear was, it's about Van Dyke's fear. Certainly, I know that when Jason Van Dyke took the stand, he was telling the truth. And the jury didn't buy it. Mm-hmm. The reality is that if it's not like sitting in home watching a video or sitting in a courtroom watching a video where you're nice and safe. You're on the street and that person with a knife is in front of you. It's what that officer feels, and that's what they needed to look at, and I don't believe they did. Now, I'm not here to criticize the jury. I think that the jury instructions could have been better, but certainly
This is a problem. We are going to appeal it, although it does. We have a process, and that means it goes to our legal defense committee. If our legal defense committee approves it, which I believe they will, then it goes to the board of directors, and the board of directors needs to approve it as well.
Well, how does this affect every Chicago police officer?
You know what? These guys are out there working their butts off every night trying to keep the city safe. You can't keep tying their hands. You got to let them go out and do good police work. And that's exactly what they've done. You know, we answer a million calls a year. And, you know, you can always find somebody who's going to complain because sometimes we have to pick winners and losers. But these guys work hard, and I think that how this Van Dyke is going to directly impact them is they're going to be thinking about the consequences of the actions that they take and very, very carefully. And what I don't want is them to hesitate and get hurt or killed. And that's a big concern of mine.
Well, it seems like we have a bit of a paradox here. And I got a text from a Chicago police officer, a friend of mine, who said after the verdict on Friday that proactive policing in Chicago died today. And on the one hand, we say these guys and women do their jobs and they work hard and put their lives online. All that's true. The other hand, we say the lack of civilian authority, political authority backup matters. Some of these decisions by courts, whether it's a consent decree or a verdict, matter, and it negatively impacts their ability to do their job. So the net, something has to give, right? They're inclined and willing to do their job and willing to risk their lives and willing to try to keep the peace. But they're being restrained from doing so, according to experts in the space. And so the net is that the city is going to be less safe or more safe, that police are going to be able to do their jobs or not do their jobs. We sort of have to pick a side in this, don't we?
You know what? I think it's about – here's what I want to answer your question. The Justice Department has changed their position on consent decrees. And what they have been doing is they have trying to include everybody to come to agreements on these, and which has been working well. So where the problems are, they address the problems, and they don't try and dismantle the police department or significantly change that. So that has been their new policy over the last year since the Trump administration got in. You know, I don't think people need to pick sides. I think what they need to do is use a little common sense. First of all, we have plenty of oversight on the police department. You know, every time there's a police shooting, an entire packet of what occurred goes to the FBI, the state's attorney, and I think there's 14 or 16 packets that go out to various departments and agencies to make sure that there is oversight in a police shooting. But people just don't like the outcome when the officer is clear. And they want to keep having another crack at the police. You know, some people would call that double jeopardy. But I think that what is needed is some common sense thinking. First of all, we have far too much oversight in the police department already. We have internal affairs, COPA. We have, you know, command channel review. We have the online supervisors. We also have, you know, the state's attorney, the state police have their integrity unit. You know, I can go on, and not to mention the inspector general.
Have you spoken with Jason Van Dyke via the phone or been in contact with his family?
I have spoken with his family. I spoke with both his wife and his father yesterday. These are difficult times. This is somebody who, certainly in my opinion, and in the opinion of most police officers, should not have been locked up. He went to work that day. He wasn't intending to shoot anyone. And it's very difficult to say that this man is being locked up for 23 hours a day and could be for a very, very long time.
Well,
this is not somebody who's a danger to society.
You know, on that matter of the potential length of his sentence, that's a subject for some debate and a pending sentencing report. But If Jason Van Dyke were to get the lower end of what he could get, which we discussed with Dan Herbert yesterday, you know, maybe get 6 years, or versus the higher end. I mean, if he gets in the single digits of years, are you concerned at all that we may have unrest delayed in reaction to a what was going to be perceived as a light sentence? Because you know what proponents of his conviction have been saying, that this he could spend the rest of his life in jail, he should spend the rest of his life in jail, and so forth. They're expecting a substantial sentence.
Well, first of all, to even put him in the category of, you know, some of the murderers that have spent time in jail is ridiculous. You know, he simply went to do his job. And I said this the other day, and I got a lot of criticism on it, but I'm going to say it again today.
Okay.
Physicians and pharmacists kill almost 100,000 people every year through mistakes that they make. Nobody's looking to indict them simply because a police officer goes and does the job that he was hired to do and trained to do. And I want to emphasize on that. Now they want to try and get their pound of flesh out of them, and I think it's wrong. And when I specifically answer your question about about whether there'll be unrest, no. I think that most people realize that he is entitled to due process. He is not a danger to society, and when we have people who have gone out and done horrendous things to the public, they don't get this much time. So I think it's up to the judge to take a look at the totality of the circumstances.
I want to get your reaction to this story in the Chicago Crusader about eight aldermen, African-American aldermen, who received upwards of $300,000 in campaign contributions from Rahm Emanuel during the runoff in 2015 for his reelection. 4 seconds. That's all the time it took to pass the Chicago City Council ordinance April 15, 2015, a proposed settlement to pay Tina Hunter, the mother of Laquan McDonald, $5 million, a $5 million legal settlement. 8 days before, Rahm Emanuel had beaten Chuy Garcia in the first ever runoff, and it was revealed that a group of black aldermen, along with another 39 aldermen, approved the $5 million settlement more than a month after they received $300,000 in campaign donations during the runoff period in that 2015 election. There's some suggestion in this piece that essentially African-American aldermen who've been silent on the topic were bought off by Rahm Emanuel and part of a cover-up to push this whole matter past his 2015 reelection. And I wonder how you react to the level of accountability that has been visited upon Rahm or the city council in this whole matter?
Well, there's a lot to answer there.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, I'm glad that the mayor is not running again. I think it's time for somebody new to come in. I think it's time for somebody who believes in the rule of law and in law enforcement. That way we can get the city back on track. People are not going to move their businesses here if we have, as you said at the top of the hour, 11,000 people shot or wounded. And that's unacceptable. I do think that when we have what's really become an industry where people have gone into court to try and get the wrongful conviction, quote, overturned when they actually did do the crimes, people need to take a harder look at these cases. We've certainly gone to the city council and said, look, don't pay off millions of dollars to somebody who broke into a house, killed the parents, and kidnapped the children, and yet they paid them anyways. I think that it is important that each case be reviewed. Let's ask the officers what happened in these cases, because this business of, oh, they were tortured or they were somehow coerced into a confession really is not true in most of these cases, and that a lot of what it is problems in the city's law office. So when somebody passes an ordinance and that there is campaign contributions put out there, I think that needs to be investigated by either the attorney general or the state attorney general, Lisa Madigan's office, or by the inspector general to find out if there was improprieties done.
All right. He is Kevin Graham. He's the president of Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge 7. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Don't miss David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Let's talk apologies. President Trump yesterday and the ceremonial swearing-in of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh offered one, I should say, from the nation to the Kavanaugh family.
I want to apologize to Brett and the entire Kavanaugh family for the terrible pain and suffering you have been forced to endure. Those who step forward to serve our country deserve a fair and dignified evaluation. Not a campaign of political and personal destruction based on lies and deception. What happened to the Kavanaugh family violates every notion of fairness, decency, and due process. Our country, a man or a woman, must always be presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. And with that, I must state that you, sir, under historic scrutiny, were proven innocent. Thank you.
There's a term for what Kavanaugh experienced. Nancy Pelosi explained it at a press briefing.
Oh, there's a...
About a year ago, a little over a year ago, June of 2017. It's called the wrap-up smear.
The wrap-up smear.
The wrap-up smear. That's what Democrats did to... Brett Kavanaugh and his family. It's the old wrap-up smear. Look.
Oh, I can't wait to
hear from a practitioner, all right? Let's hear from an expert, Nancy Pelosi.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. You demonize, and then we call it the wrap-up smear. If you want to talk politics, you call it the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it,
all right,
and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press that this, 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 and this. So they have that validation that the press reported the smear, and then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic.
It's a tactic.
And it's self-evident.
Huh.
But I think I'm worth the trouble.
Yeah. So here you go. For you that want to try, if you want to try the wrap-up smear at home.
Sounds like a lovely dish.
With your friends. Yes. So there's the smear.
Right.
And then you merchandise it.
Yeah.
And then you get the press to report the smear, and then you merchandise the press's reporting of the smear.
Oh, there you go.
It's the old wrap-up smear.
Don't you know about the wrap-up smear?
Why are people making such a big deal about it? It's just a tactic. It's just a tactic.
Well, do you think obviously he was the victim of the wrap-up smear from the left, but do you think President Trump should have apologized on behalf of the nation? Was Brett Kavanaugh and his family... Did they deserve that?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I was a little taken back when I saw it. I mean, I didn't think it was inappropriate, but I just went, it gave me great pause. Oh, wow.
Oh, I think President Trump is reading this one right, and confirming this is a CNN SSRS poll.
Oh, I love that one.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting. While only 41% of those polled said they wanted to see Kavanaugh confirmed, 56% disapproved of the way Democrats handled the confirmation hearing. Mm. So there's this break because things are not always binary, right? I'm not sold on Kavanaugh. I have questions about him, is what the public is saying. But I have no questions about the conduct of Democrats. I found it despicable. I found it disgusting. So I may have legitimate questions about Kavanaugh. I'm a little reticent on him because I believe some of what was reported, thus the effectiveness of the wrap-up smear.
Right. And I think they're going to pay for that come the midterms.
Well, if it can be sustained. But this is, I mean, it's 36-56 approve of the way Democrats handled it. Hmm. So 56-36, 20-point margin overall. Among independents, 58% of independents disapproved the way Democrats handled the nomination compared to 30 who approved, minus 28 among independents. And thus you see now the basis for the Kavanaugh bump that Republicans around the country, including, as I mentioned yesterday, redounding to the state and local level, because I'm seeing in legislative races in Illinois, the Kavanaugh bump that Republicans have received because people looked at the antics of the cultural Marxists banging on the doors of the Supreme Court.
Shut it down! Shut it down! Shut it down! Shut it down!
Interrupting.
One of those ladies was going to break her hand banging on the door so hard.
Interrupting the confirmation vote, the proceeding over which Mike Pence was presiding.
Sergeant at Arms will restore order in the gallery.
Senator Warren, you'll have your turn.
The sergeant at arms will restore
sergeant
order.
Sergeant at arms is very busy.
Yeah, it was the sergeant at arms was like doing suicides. He runs in, he runs one out, right. He runs back in.
And don't forget, during the first hearing, 92 people were arrested.
Right. So the astroturfing protesters and the hysterics and the accosting people at elevators, they saw that, the American people, and they saw and heard from Democrat senators on the Judiciary Committee. And they didn't find it particularly compelling.
Because you know what? As much as they might hate the right and Republicans, they're just one accusation away from going through the same hell that Kavanaugh just went through.
I think there's something there, right? It's this notion of fair play and due process and important first principles of a free society, like in which direction the presumption should go, in addition to the actual substance of the corroboration of the competing stories. So very interesting. Just getting back all the way to President Trump's remarks in introducing Kavanaugh yesterday at the ceremonial swearing-in, yeah, I think he was right on point, because I think that's what the majority of the American people believe the Kavanaugh family is owed, an apology, not just the accusation. Your daughter, you recount how your daughter said a prayer for Blase Ford, and a leftist cartoonist lampooned your daughter in a political cartoon.
Yeah, that was bad.
People aren't down with that.
No.
Reasonable people who have some sense of fair play, regardless of their political affiliation, aren't down with that. And Trump understood it, and I think he made the right call there, as did Brett Kavanaugh in his remarks, suggesting that there's no bitterness. He's moved beyond the acrimony, and he's looking forward to being the kind of judge on the Supreme Court that he was on the appellate court.
The Senate confirmation process was contentious and emotional. That process is over. My focus now is to be the best justice I can be. I take this office with gratitude and no bitterness. On the Supreme Court, I will seek to be a force for stability and unity. My goal is to be a great justice for all Americans and for all of America. I will work very hard to achieve that goal. I was not appointed to serve one party or one interest, but to serve one nation. America's Constitution and laws protect every person of every belief and every background. Every litigant in the Supreme Court can be assured that I will listen to their arguments with respect and an open mind.
And that was Kavanaugh responding to the 11th hour charges against him with respect to temperament and bias and, you know, the idea he'd be conflicted in so many cases and he'd be an incomplete court where he'd be recusing himself from cases all the time because he made what were characterized as partisan statements in his confirmation hearing in response to the charges against him. Bunch of nonsense. I think he handled that right. Kavanaugh also going on to say what happened, not only will it not change me in terms of the kind of judge I am, won't change me in terms of the kind of person I am.
In the wake of the Senate confirmation process, my approach to life also remains the same. I will continue to heed the message of Matthew 25. I will continue to volunteer to serve the least fortunate among us. I will continue to coach, teach, and tutor. I will continue to strive to be a good friend, colleague, husband, and dad.
He'll continue to coach until I move to D.C. and take over his job.
Maybe you guys could be co-coaches.
Oh, yeah. That works out well.
I mean, because you've got busy schedules.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know,
like this game, I'll do that one.
You know,
you do the home games, I'll do the away one.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you believe that Trump and Kavanaugh struck the right notes at that ceremonial swearing in? And do you believe that Clarence Thomas should have been a gentleman and gotten Ruth Bader Ginsburg a parka because she was a very cold. She was wearing gloves.
Yeah, she was. She doesn't look well. She looked very feeble last night. Also, I'm very concerned about her health.
Yeah.
I am, and her warmth. I don't think she's doing burpees this morning if you wanted to ask me about it.
Mike in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning. Trump is certainly a flawed guy, but his ability to counterpunch Democrat themes and what they want to accomplish is flawless. His apology last night was to head off the idea that the Supreme Court is illegitimate, and just the way he said he leveled the playing field for Kavanaugh during the hearing, I think he leveled the playing field on that argument with that apology last night, using the presidential bully pulpit to make that point and reset that argument. I think it was brilliant.
All right.
And the only question I have is, Dan, you're an historian, Amy, a reporter. '68, the Democrats tore each other apart over social issues and whatnot. Are we seeing a replay of that? I mean, is it too much hope for as Republican that they tear themselves apart? Right now it seems like they're more like tearing the country apart. They're more united. But does the same thing happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, they're united, but there's certainly some internal acrimony and people that are directing anger towards some of the participants in their what's the term again? Oh yeah, wrap up smear, Avenatti and that clown show.
That didn't help. No,
Chris Coons, for example, is singing a very different tune on the prospect of impeachment of Kavanaugh than Cory Booker was in Iowa as he was prospecting for presidential votes. So it'll be interesting to see. I agree. I don't think it's like 68 in terms of a culture clash within the Democrat Party. Clearly, the socialists are ascendant. It's the Democrat Socialist Party. And you saw that displayed across the board with members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And you see that almost without exception when it comes to people who have platforms on the left and within the party. So I don't think that that's happening. But I think the other part of what you said, that they are cruising to be hoist by their own petar, to be undone by their own radicalism, I think that's much more likely, particularly as this Kavanaugh matter has turned out. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I am so happy that Trump not only apologized but declared Kavanaugh was innocent, because I believe most of America thinks Kavanaugh was innocent, and I hope he takes it a step further and urges that Blasey Ford be indicted for perjury, because she clearly lied, especially with her two doors. There's evidence all over the internet claiming that she lied about her double doors, meaning she lied about the trauma over this make-believe event.
Yeah, we're not. Blasey Ford.
Convicting Blasey Ford of perjury. How do they impeach Kavanaugh when their lead witness is a convicted perjurer?
Yeah.
Fight fire with fire, Dan.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Rawr. I think you let Blasey Ford walk away. And note that she is walking away. One of the reasons you say, how do they impeach Kavanaugh? Your star witness has no interest in it.
Yeah, her attorneys came forward over the weekend, told Dana Bash, we're done. She has no, and they said it with such conviction, too. Like, no, we're not doing that. She doesn't want that.
So you don't have her interested in pursuing impeachment politically. You don't have her interested in pursuing Kavanaugh criminally by filing a police report, which she could still do. So what do you have? You have a dozen or so Democrats who are trying to demagogue the issue for their own short-term political gain. You don't have much.
And Tom, what she has is $1 million now.
Tom and Deer Park.
Dan, good morning. Help me out here. Let me get this straight. I thought that this open seat initially was about a conservative justice appointed by Donald Trump that would be a jeopardy to Roe versus Wade, in other words, the right to legally kill babies, and then the Second Amendment and other conservative causes. Then I was to understand that it was about some dude that spent way too much money on baseball tickets. Then I was to understand about uncorroborated rape charges. Then I was to understand that he drank too much and wrote silly stuff in his yearbook. But now, help me out here, that really all this is about this tactic they've had in their back pocket called a wrap-up smear. And they would have done this to anybody and anybody, including if it was Amy Barrett.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. If one wrap-up smear doesn't work, you move on to the next wrap-up smear.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. No, not the treatment of Brett Kavanaugh. John Mayer, his new mail contract.
Oh, yeah. I think he's very soothing. I like him.
It's like Muzak, not music. John Mayer at one of these concerts for 12-year-old girls that he holds. Had this to say about male-female relations in 2018.
Bullshit is the idea that if you're a man, any woman you see, you should be able to get an erection. And when we don't, that's the trauma.
Mom, what's that?
That I don't want it to be the male contract. I'm telling you that's the contract, and we have to tear the contract up. And we.
I think we're supposed to.
What's that?
Please clap.
No, it does.
What is happening?
No, hold on. This is fine. She's actually asking a really decent
Q&A with John Mayer.
Pertinent question. What you're saying, what is the male contract then?
Yeah, what is it?
The male contract is to, at between the ages of whatever, puberty and college, to be instructed to have a class, to have a voice of reason taught to young men. You are not supposed to be able to do this to everything that moves. You are not entitled to be able to do this to everything that moves. Yeah. This does not come naturally
that
to a man.
That is the contract.
This does not come unnaturally to a man. You do not possess the universal ability to have any woman that you see. They're scared and you're scared. And I'm just going on record as revealing the trauma of men feeling like they've fallen short of a bullshit alpha male contract that nobody can live up to. And until we get rid of that in men, we won't have the life that we all deserve. And I'm sorry.
Rambling nonsense. So the alpha male contract is the problem. We need a new contract that says, I recognize all of womankind, that I recognize that I don't have the right, I don't have the expectation to get a Woody all the time. Number two, to expect that I can sleep with every woman.
How dare you think that? You know what? I'll raise my kids, my boys. I don't need John Mayer.
Are you sure you don't need him?
I'm positive.
In a 2010 Playboy interview, John Mayer also had this to say. There have probably been days when I saw 300 vaginas before I got out of bed, referring to early morning porn binges. My junk is sort of like a white supremacist.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Okay. I've got a Benetton heart and a effing David Duke blank.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, my body's a wonderland.
Yeah, Jennifer Love Hewitt, bad choice. I'm just very horny. I'm a douchebag. That's why black people love me. John Mayer, Playboy interview. Wait, there's more. Someone asked me the other day, what does it feel like now to have a hood pass? It's sort of a contradiction in terms because you really had a hood pass. You could call it an N-word pass. That's this pasty white dude, John Mayer, in Playboy 8 years ago. I mean, I'm sure he's grown up a lot since.
He had to.
As you heard with that compelling social commentary on male-female relations offered by John Mayer. Minka Kelly, you should be embarrassed to have ever gone out with him. Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston went out with
Minka Kelly from Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
Yeah. John Mayer.
Friday Night Lights, how old are you? The movie or the series, the television series?
I'm old enough to have lived through the first part of this millennium. I'm older than 13. That's how old I am. All right, for more on John Mayer's new contract as well as other matters, male, female, Kavanaugh, Ford related, we're pleased to be joined by John Smirak. He is the writer and editor for TheStream.org. TheStream.org. Also, the author of the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. John, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning. I kept thinking you were saying John Smirak, that I was being alleged to have said all this insane stuff you were just quoting.
Yes, I was setting it up. Now, answer for your 2010 yeah. Playboy interview, Mr. Smirak. So are you rethinking your relationships with the fair sex after hearing from John Mayer?
He sounds like somebody got out of his 28 days of sex addiction treatment, and he's just babbling back what he read in the self-help book.
Yeah, precisely. All right, let me ask you this question about gloating. A fellow conservative, David Marcus, writing in the New York Times, he writes for the Federalist, normally writing in the New York Times, conservatives wrong to gloat about Kavanaugh. There's every reason for those on the right to celebrate, but there are also some very good reasons to keep those celebrations quiet, respectful, and dignified. One reason a muted and conciliatory approach is advisable is that the court, unlike elected branches of government, exercises power not through control of the purse or the military, but through faith of the American people. I agree with the inclination to oppose gloating. I don't really think that the Supreme Court's legitimacy in the American public's mind is really in much jeopardy. But what about his larger point about being respectful, humble, and moving on?
I don't want the Supreme Court to have a lot of legitimacy. It's been running like a super legislature, like a five-man dictatorship since roughly 1973 when it issued Roe v. Wade. And that's not just me saying that. Antonin Scalia said we are in the danger of being governed by five lawyers, a dictatorship of five lawyers. So I welcome the politicization of Supreme Court nominations. When Lindsey Graham, admirably stood up for Kavanaugh, when he said, say hello to Kagan and Sotomayor, I voted for them, I thought, yeah, well, you should be ashamed of that. No Republican should have ever voted to endorse people with leftist political philosophies like that or judicial philosophies like that. And I'm glad, I'm glad the Senate Republicans have woken up and stopped meekly confirming leftists appointed by people like Obama and, in fact, started fighting for moderates like Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh is not a judicial conservative, in my view, like Scalia or Clarence Thomas. He's a moderate. He's a little more conservative than somebody like Bill Clinton would have appointed. The fact is that the left has gone so far out onto an extreme that they can't tell Brett Kavanaugh from, David Duke or Alex Jones.
Well, their biggest fear is that he's going to be, you know, the deciding vote, and if there's a possibility of Roe v. Wade being overturned. Do you see that
happening? That would be wonderful. I don't necessarily expect it, but, yeah, imagine that. Imagine that American citizens get to vote on the laws in their states. That's all Roe v. Wade does is it keeps the people from voting on abortion in their 50 states. And so this has been a tantrum by the left at the idea of democracy, at the idea of popular sovereignty. No, everything has to be done by five Ivy League lawyers appointed for life in a smoke-filled room, so to speak. And so when I see this hysteria over at Kavanaugh, that is leftist elites shrieking because they're afraid of democracy.
It seems to me, just picking up on Marcus's piece about not gloating, okay, we shouldn't gloat, but we should continue to be morally indignant because the public seems to be relatively scandalized by how Kavanaugh was treated by Democrats.
Yeah.
And if we want to sustain that for the next 30 days to the political benefit of the Trump policy agenda and Republican control of Congress, we should continue to remind people how exactly they behaved.
Absolutely. In fact, we need to continue to just stand up to them when they do things like in Portland. These Antifa thugs took over the streets,
yeah,
and they were directing traffic and attacking cars that didn't obey them, and the police were just standing there watching it happen. It was like a paramilitary group had taken over the city. The more the left gets hysterical and continues to be hysterical over the Kavanaugh thing, the better, because we can highlight that, and we can let the voters know if the Democrats take the House on November 6th, this is going to be a national spectacle. And if you thought the show trial of Brett Kavanaugh is bad, wait till they start the show trial of Donald Trump when they impeach him, which they've all said they're going to do. The Democrats get the House, they're going to impeach Donald Trump no matter what Mueller gives them. He could give them a greasy paper bag with a ham sandwich in it. They will spend 2 years of the Congress's time on a nonstop impeachment trial against Trump, against people in his cabinet, against Kavanaugh, because they don't care. They think it was illegitimate for them to lose the 2016 election. Obama was supposed to fundamentally transform America. It was supposed to be irreversible. They're going to do whatever they can to nullify the people's vote. And if they win on November 6th, watch out, because the Kavanaugh circus will look like a picnic compared to what's going to happen in America after that.
Last question on the Kavanaugh circus. The question about whether to go after and potentially prosecute any of those who testified under oath less than truthfully, perhaps not Ms. Ford, but more like maybe Ms. Swetnick.
I want to go after Ford to get her to flip on her attorneys, because I think they consciously colluded to maybe convince her that it was really Kavanaugh. I want to see what Katz was up to. I want to see those notes. I want to see the communications. I want to know if Katz should be disbarred. Remember, this is a woman who's worked for George Soros for the last 15 years, who just conveniently shows up to represent this person who doesn't want to go public and doesn't want to be politicized. No, I'm sorry. I would leverage potential perjury charges against Ford in order to find the corruption of her attorneys. Yes, go after them. Absolutely. Hammer and tongs.
All right. He is John Smirak. He is no shrinking violet. He's also the writer and editor of thestream.org and author of the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. You and me,
baby. Dan and Amy, and it's time for Uncle Dan and Little Amy and animal stories. All right, Little Amy, you got a gator you want to talk about?
Oh, I got a gator, and it's a big one. They're going to mess around. Somebody apparently let their pet gator in Lake Michigan. But the worst part is they tied his mouth shut with a rubber band, painter's tape, blue painter's tape, so that he couldn't defend himself or even get food. It was so sad.
That's mean.
A kayaker who was fishing for salmon in Lake Michigan, right off the beautiful coast of Waukegan, found the gator yesterday at around 9:30 in the morning, and he didn't wait for, you know, people to come. He put the gator He lured him in. He put a hook on the back of his scaly back and slowly moved him into his boat.
Sure. So now everybody in the neighborhood has alligator shoes.
No. They're going to try and rehabilitate the gator. They said that he's in shock right now. Yeah. I don't know how they know that he's in shock. He's at some wildlife discovery center in Lake Forest.
Oh, well.
Still kind of stressed out, he said, over the ordeal, but has also won a new lease on life. And they're going to find out get to know his personality probably today or tomorrow. And that they'll provide optimal heat, warm water, and normal alligator climate.
His personality. Okay. His personality is get this freaking taper off from my mouth. Give me something to eat.
And I'm going
to
get you suck off while leaving me. In the lake. It's cold out.
I hope they do catch whoever it was that tied his mouth shut.
They abandoned their... I mean, obviously they wanted to kill it, but they didn't have the cojones to do it themselves. So a slow, painful death in Lake Michigan. Cruel people.
That's right.
We're going to get you. What do you got?
Now we have...
Which juice guts over there?
A fun animal story. This is a story of of saving a life. And there's no more inspiring story than saving the life of a squirrel.
Well, that day I was just helping out the squirrel, you know.
19-year-old Chris Felix is an animal lover.
I think it hit my back wheel.
So when he thought he ran over a squirrel in this Brooklyn Park neighborhood, he stopped. When it didn't move, he decided to use his CPR training skills.
I was like, well, you know, you never get to see this. So I was there trying to help it out, you know. Something little means a lot in the long run.
Chris is also a car detailer, so he happened to have gloves on him.
So I just put a glove on, and I'm like, you know what? Give it my best shot.
He started tiny chest compressions. Two officers on patrol stopped to see what was going on.
Stage 5 CPR?
I think it is. Look at him.
How often do you come across a story where you see a police officer come upon somebody doing CPR on a squirrel?
In the officer's body camera video, Chris doesn't leave the squirrel's side.
He's coming around now.
Chris says it was nearly 20 minutes before, finally, the little guy got up and ran away. He and the officers high-fived.
You saved his life, dude.
Help out little things, you know, little things matter.
Just the humanity of it. It wasn't just a police officer and a citizen there. Those were just three people enjoying the moment.
It's a
rat with a tail. I mean, if you run over it, then you run back over it again to make sure you finish the job.
Chris, the squirrel is breathing. There's no need for the mouth-to-mouth. Chris, back away from the squirrel.
I mean, I saw the video of him pumping his chest with his little index finger.
Yeah, doing the chest compressions.
Right, but did he get in for a kiss?
He was later arrested for bestiality. Good thing it was him and not Mike Huckabee.
Oh.
Because that thing would be in a popcorn popper. You know how Huckabee likes fried squirrel. It's true. I've got an idea, though, for something for Chicago's parks. This is like the kind of ordinance, since Burton and Terrace is no longer with us, Ed Burke could introduce this. Little mini defibrillators in all of our parks so that people can bring park animals back to life in the instance they have a cardiac event like the squirrel.
It'll say break glass and emergency. Yeah. Really tiny on it.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, those are animals. From Uncle Dan and William.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And the question that's being batted about is, have shrill Democrat socialists ensured that the Great Revolt continues through November 6th? To answer that question for us, let's talk to the author of The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics, also reporter for The Washington Examiner, New York Post columnist, CNN contributor. She is Selena Zito. Selena, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And so what about that? You're one of the outlets for which you work, The Washington Examiner, reporting yesterday, 28-point spread among independents, negative in the direction of Democrats in terms of their handling of the Kavanaugh confirmation. Is that sustainable through November 6th?
Well, I mean, you know, 30 days can be forever in American politics. Having said that, the Democrats have sustained an energy level for 2 years. So it's not improbable to imagine that Republicans and independents who are unsatisfied with the way Kavanaugh was handled are going to maintain that level of anxiety about the Democrats all the way up until Election Day. I mean, Republicans can take advantage of it if they're smart in states that have early voting and, you know, make sure that they get their voters out to the polls. And also they can utilize absentee ballots. But Democrats are doing the same as well. I think the key here is independence. I think Republicans are already really, really energized. 10 days ago, I would have said the enthusiasm is nowhere near equal. That has completely changed in the handling of Brett Kavanaugh. That doesn't mean he is someone who is liked. You have to remember this is a gentleman who went to a prep school, you know, who's had a, you know, a life very different than a lot of people across the country. But it's not him personally. It's how he was treated that has galvanized these voters around him and away from the Democrats.
And, Selena, what do you make of Christine Blasey Ford, her attorney, saying over the weekend that they're not going to pursue impeachment, that they're going to leave this alone?
I suspect that Dr. Ford probably wants her life to go, well, you can never go back, but to at least start to take on the form of normal as quickly as possible. But there's nothing more destabilizing than having your life thrown up in the air, being separated from your family, social media, you know, sort of taking over every corner of your life. So I suspect that, you know, she's going to want this. Now, this might make people question her motives. But I think that would be probably unfair. I think a lot of people looked at her testimony and thought she was believable, but weren't quite sure if she was, had the full sort of evidence to back her up.
And we've had some back and forth, some disagreement this morning on this topic. The idea of actually pursuing perjury charges against the women who came forward and who spoke under penalty of perjury, including Ford, or a guest we had previously suggesting leverage Ford with the potential of a perjury charge to ascertain the role that her attorney, Ms. Katz, and who worked for George Soros, and collusion with Dianne Feinstein and Senate Judiciary Democrats. It strikes me that there's no appetite for that, and that would be a good for Republicans to have this thing turn on them. But I want to get your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. This is very similar, and probably half your audience isn't old enough to remember this, but this is very similar to how then President Gerald Ford handled resigned President Nixon, in that he pardoned him. And while nobody has pardoning powers over other people's testimonies, it's the same kind of thing where people want to put this chapter behind us, and the chips will fall where they may in terms of how where people fall on how this was prosecuted by the Democratic Party, and many people also believe by my profession and by Hollywood getting involved. It's on the lines of culture more than politics. Mm-hmm. It's more of an in-out thing than a left-right thing.
Well, last night, President Trump apologized on behalf of the nation. Were you expecting him to say that, or did that throw you a little off guard?
Nothing he says throws me off guard, because I have the expectation that he will always say something that is not
girlfriend.
Something that any other president has ever said, because that's who he is, right? This is just further proof. Look, I mean, if you're a politician and you're a Republican politician, you're looking at that like, okay, well, Kavanaugh gave a heartfelt sort of outline of who he is. And sort of a somewhat apology for too much politics in his initial statement. And the president ginned up his, the people that are already excited to come out and vote and feel as though he was treated wrong. So I, in terms of politics, for the president, it did what he wanted it to do. And for Democrats, it made them just as mad as they've been.
I wanted to address another topic because the one group it doesn't seem like we can do anything to generate more enthusiasm from are the Russians. This report out yesterday that researchers find no evidence that Russia is messing with the 2018 election, at least not yet. These are groups of computer security and influence operators that are making this essentially threat assessment. Boy, I tell you, there's no evidence of Russian collusion in the 2016 campaign, and there's no evidence of Russian interference in the 2018 campaign. The Democrats seem to be losing one of their central themes in terms of the bill of particulars against Trump.
Well, if you're a Democrat, I believe that you're always going to firmly believe that because we have become so polarized in that we want to believe. You know, it's like politics has replaced religion for a lot of people, right? And they're going to defend their religion, you know, to the end. And so I think that it's going to be hard-pressed to find a Democrat who's going to be persuaded to believe otherwise. And it's going to be hard-pressed to find a Republican that says, I told you so.
Well, right. I mean, the left, though, in particular, I mean, just the Scott Kelly thing yesterday, this apology for quoting Winston Churchill, I mean, or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez misstating the historical rationale for the Electoral College. On the left, it seems like if I feel, I don't have to know. And so that's dangerous place, it seems to me.
Again, I think it's this in-out thing in our culture, elites or not elites, right? And so I think Mr. Kelly, an astronaut who is seen as someone who came from sort of the middle of the country and has been, you know, somewhat of a moderate in terms of politics until it was his sister-in-law that was shot, correct?
Yeah, right.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Gabby.
Right.
Giffords,
right.
You know, for him to be unable to quote Churchill is something you would only find in elite circles. It is not something that you would find out in the Midwest, where people have a more pragmatic view of Churchill, as opposed to the left, who now has found him to be someone awful. I think our left-right blur outside of D.C. is not as, you know, people are usually just a couple degrees between each other. I have a story about that in the New York Post on Sunday. People are typically only a couple degrees away from each other on most issues. But in Washington, there is a bigger divide between the people in the middle of the country and them. And I think that's maybe where the election breaks and not left, right.
And wanted to get your take, what you may know that most of us wouldn't, about the Rod Rosenstein-Trump meeting on Air Force One yesterday, long anticipated, what his future is and what the truth is behind that story about him wanting to go, you know, Maxwell Smart on Trump.
I have no idea.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I because I live in Pittsburgh and, you know, only go to Washington when absolutely necessary. I'm not really tapped into the palace intrigues of Washington as much as I am more tapped into the people outside of Washington.
Fair enough. Well, that's your stock and trade, and that's what differentiates you. There's no question. She's Selena Zito. The book, you got to pick up, The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics. And you can always get Selena's work at the Washington Examiner, the New York Post, and on CNN. Selena, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, a new malady in the modern age. Netflix addiction. It's a disease, Amy.
Yeah, you know what the problem is? And I blame Netflix for this because they suck. Well, they don't release. I wish they would do, you know, similar to what Showtime does or what normal network TV does. One episode, 1 week. That'll keep you sane. That'll keep you solid. That'll let you, you know, go on your way and do other tasks. But this dumping a whole season on you is, it's an addiction.
Should Budweiser release only one case of beer
it's
a
one
day?
One can a week. Of beer
yeah.
a day.
This started because a unidentified 26-year-old in India checked himself into the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences in Bangalore last week after using Netflix to escape the reality of his unemployment for 6 months.
Yeah. Fantasy world.
The Hindu told a clinical psychologist at the Institute's Service for Healthy Use of Technology. Shut.
I'm like
familiar
that.
With it.
Yeah.
Told the Hindu that the man turned to Netflix, it's another outlet, to escape pressures from family to find a job, forgetting his problems and deriving quote unquote immense pleasure from it.
Well, yeah. That's why people watch it. That's why it's an addiction. I mean, I was caught one time in my closet watching House of Cards because I kept saying I'm going to turn it off and I couldn't turn it off. You forget that you have children. You forget that you have responsibility. You get sucked into this Netflix world.
Not in the DSM-5 is Netflix addiction, you know. But maybe someday it will be.
You're addicted. You stay up all you binge watch seasons.
I binge watch seasons of particular shows. Yes. So what's the it's not addicted. I don't watch like every piece of crap that's on Netflix or Amazon. I watch good shows. So
you should watch Annie.
If they were releasing a season of Ozark like every other week, then I would probably be.
I love Ozark.
You know, not
what's
spending a lot of time at work.
Well, what are you? Well, your favorite show is Game of Thrones, right?
No, I don't watch Game of Thrones. No, the original Game of Thrones. I don't watch this American bastardization of the Ian Richardson version the BBC did back in the early 90s.
Okay. What about Netflix? Ozark? What else? House of Cards, you know you're going to watch, right?
I don't watch House of Cards.
Know your co-host.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.